Okay, it's Parshas Tazria, which is page 608. This Shabbos is Parshas Tazria. It's also Parshas HaChodesh. It's the last one of the four special Parshas, which deals with the first mitzvah of making a calendar, but particularly with more emphasis deals with the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, the mitzvah of the Paschal Lamb, which the Yidden had to bring in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, in Mitzrayim and in the Beis HaMikdash, every Pesach, every Erev Pesach, and eat it on Pesach night by the Seder. And of course, that's why we read it this time of the year, because it's getting to this Shabbos and the Shabbos before the month of Nisan. And that's why we read it at this time. So what I'm going to do in this week's parsha, in today's shir actually, is concentrate on one detail of this week's parsha, which happens to be also connected with Parshas HaChodesh. Although they're not necessarily connected, because Parshas HaChodesh can come on any Shabbos. But I'll just show you something that is connected. So, the truth is that Parshas Tazria, it's an interesting parsha, because the first part of the parsha deals with one din. Most of the parsha, which we're not going to deals with the impurity of tzaras, the impurity of what they mistranslate as leprosy, which is not really leprosy, but it's a skin disease, which was a spiritual disease, which was manifested on the skin in times of old. It came as a result, Chazal tell us, as a result of people talking Lashon Hara, and if someone got tzaras, they had to go to a kohen. The kohen had to examine it, diagnose it, and if the kohen came to the conclusion that it was in fact tzaras, that person would become impure and have to be isolated, like quarantined for a period of time. And then was a whole process.
Is that like shingles?
No, it's a disease which you don't have today. As I said, it sounds like in English words like psoriasis or something. It's not. It is a skin disease. It is a, as I said, that the commentaries explain that it's more like a spiritual disease, which then manifests itself in a physical way. When the person was purified, when the person became healthy from it, it was then that the person had to go through a whole process of purification, which is described in next week's parasha, Parashas Matzor. That's the main. Now, tzaras can come on three things. Tzaras can come on a person's body, a person's skin. Tzaras can also come on clothing, which is discussed in this week's parsha. And in fact, tzaras can also come on the walls of the homes, which is talked about in next week's parsha. But I'm not going to focus on that. I'm actually going to focus on the first part of this week's parsha, which is something totally different. And the first part of this week's parsha is the tumor, the impurity, which a person contracts in childbirth. A woman gets this impurity in childbirth. And let's have a look at the parsha, at the parsha, page 608. Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe Lamer, and Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, saying, Daber el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, Lamer, saying, Isha kisazria, a woman who conceives, v'yolda zocher, and she gives birth to a male, a son, in other words, v'tomo shivas yomim, she will become immediately impure for 7 days, k'mei nidas dvoi satitma, which will be similar to the impurity of menstruation, of nidah, v'yom hashmini, on the 8th day, Yimol Basar or Losoi, the son shall be circumcised, right? Then it goes through a whole process of another 33 days, which is still part of the impurity process. She cannot come to the Beis HaMikdash. And at the end of the whole 40 days, she has to bring certain sacrifices, and she becomes pure. Incidentally, interestingly enough, if a woman gives birth to a girl, it's double the amount of impurity. It's 14 days impurity and then another 66 days, which comes out. Sorry? Well, for a boy, it's 7 and 33.
Oh, it's 66.
For a girl, it's 14 and 66. Now, contrary to what some people interpret, this has nothing to do with the inferiority of a female.
Uh-huh.
Actually, on the contrary, we discussed last week, one of the explanations is, we discussed last week, that tumor impurity is attracted where there's more life. One of the reasons that a woman who gives birth becomes impure is because she carried life. And although that life is still there, it's born and it's a separate life, but it's no longer in her. And that's why she attracts that impurity and needs a process of purification. When a woman gives birth to a girl, there was more life that was lost because, lost from her in other words, because a woman carries a child. So therefore when a person is carrying a girl, that girl also is a not only life, but it's life that has potential life in her as well. And that's why the tumah, the impurity, is actually greater. Okay. But that's not what I want to focus on, that's just to mention it. But one of the psukim we have here is Ubayoy Mashmini, right? This pasuk we just learned, Pasuk 3, verse 3. Ubayoy Mashmini, on the eighth day, Yimol B'sar Lasa, he should be circumcised. Now, it's interesting that the Torah repeats this mitzvah because we know the mitzvah of circumcision and all that circumcision represents was already given all the way at the beginning of the Torah in Parshas Lech Lecha, right? The third parsha of the Torah. The mitzvah of Milah was given to Avraham Avinu. One of the mitzvahs that were given before the giving of the Torah was given to Avraham. In fact, today at a bris, when a baby circumcised, the father makes a bracha, Lehachnisoi bivrisoi shel Avraham Avinu. He praises Hashem for having the opportunity to bring a child into the covenant of Abraham. It's called brisoi shel Avraham Avinu, right? So, now it's true that the Rambam says that all mitzvahs that were given before the Torah was given, we keep because they were re-given at Matan Torah, right? In other words, our mitzvahs that we observe are all to do from the fact that it was given at Matan Torah. That's true. So all the mitzvahs were re-given at Matan Torah, but nevertheless, not all of them are repeated. In other words, for example, the mitzvah of having children, right? So that's given in Bereishis. We keep it because it was re-given at the giving of the Torah, but it doesn't necessarily repeat it in the Torah. So we just assume that it was re-given. But the fact that the pasuk repeats here, another pasuk to do with circumcision, is significant. And in fact, Chazal tell us that from this pasuk in this week's parsha, we learn a number of things. Through the methodology of the oral Torah, we learn a number of extra halachas that we didn't know before. For example, and we'll just go into some of them on a more technical level and then share with you something that's a bit philosophical. So, it says Ubayoy Mashmini on the eighth day. But we know it's on the eighth day. We know that from Parshas Lech Lecha that bris is on the eighth day. So Chazal tell us, what does Ubayoy Mashmini mean? That Ubayoy Mashmini on the eighth day includes Shabbos. Includes Shabbos. Okay? That it means if a baby is born on a Shabbos and the eighth day falls out on the next Shabbos, notwithstanding the fact that a bris involves activities which are normally prohibited on Shabbos, a number of activities, nevertheless, the Torah mandates that the bris should take place on Shabbos anyway. And we learn that out of this. But that's only if it's by Yom HaShmini, it's only if it's on the eighth day. We know that if a bris is not on time, right? If a baby is not on time, then the bris is not on the eighth day. The bris is not on Shabbos. I mean, if a bris is delayed, if a baby is not well, or whatever the case is, and then the baby becomes healthy on Shabbos, and it's possible to do the bris, the bris is not performed on Shabbos, the bris is pushed off for after Shabbos. Same goes for Shabbos, same goes for Yom Tov, right? So this step, the bris overrides Shabbos, is only if it's by Yom HaShmini, only if it's on the eighth day, right? I don't know if I ever told you this, there's a famous riddle that we used to get asked as children, you know, halachic riddles. So the riddle was always, how could it be, there should be three boys born within half an hour, all within the same half an hour, all healthy and ready to have a bris, and yet their bris is on three separate days. When are Ben Hashmashes? Friday, right? So the answer is as follows. The answer is, if you have three boys, one is born on Friday afternoon just before sunset, one is born in the period between sunset and dusk, which we refer to as Bein HaShmoshes, it's the no man's land, we're not sure when it is, right? And then half an hour later, it's ready for sure Friday night. Okay, so one is born on technically halachically Friday, one is born on the in-between time, which we're not sure if it's Friday or Shabbos, and one is born on Friday night, which is probably Shabbos, right? And that can happen all within half an hour. So the answer then, or what happens is as follows: the one that was born just before sunset, his bris will be on Friday, because he's born on Friday, so the next Friday is his bris, right? The third one that's born properly into Shabbos he's for sure born on Shabbos, his bris is the next Shabbos. The problem is the kid born in the middle. Why? Because the way it works is if someone's born what we call Bein HaShemashas, in that period we're not sure if it's the previous day or the next day, right? Then you've got to push it off a day. So what happens like this, that child cannot have his bris on Friday because we're not sure if Friday's the 8th day. Friday might be the 7th day because maybe he was born on Shabbos. The problem is you can't do that bris on Shabbos either, because it is possible that the child was born on Friday. And if the child was born on Friday, then Shabbos is the 9th day, and when the bris is on the 9th day, it doesn't override Shabbos. Right? So therefore you have no choice. That one's bris, you have to push off the Sunday. Okay? Right, but you have no choice, because you can't do it on the 8th day, because you're not sure when the 8th day is, and therefore because you're not sure what the 8th day is, it doesn't override Shabbos. So you can't do it on Friday because it's too early, maybe. You can't do it on Shabbos because maybe it's not an 8th day bris. Only an 8th day bris pushes off Shabbos. Follow? Okay, that's just a nice little thing. Yeah? Well, doesn't that, I'm saying, well, when I asked about three boys born from the same, doesn't it be from the same mother? I mean, the riddle is just that they're all born, it could be from different mothers, but you're right, it could be from the same mother also. It could happen with this, exactly, it could happen. It could be brothers, you're right. Yeah, it could be triplets, correct.
Is it critical to break the Shabbat? It's for the wrong reason. It's not really Shabbos, so you shouldn't have it on Shabbos.
Well, say, yeah, exactly. The point is that a bris can only override Shabbos if it's the 8th day.
Yeah.
But if you're not sure it's the 8th day, then it needs to be pushed off.
So it's Sunday.
Sunday, yeah.
Okay.
Now, on that, just, I'll tell you, show you a few interesting things. There's an interesting question. The first person, now, we say like this, only if a bris is on the 8th day of birth, if it was, we call a bris bismana, it's a bris on time, then it overrides Shabbos. But if it's not on time, it doesn't, right? So the question is, Avraham Avinu had his bris. He was 99, correct? Not exactly on time. When was his bris? So there's different commentaries exactly when his bris took place. There are some that hold that his bris took place on Yom Kippur. That the day that Avraham Avinu circumcised himself with his whole household was actually Yom Kippur. Now we have a rule that Avraham Avinu kept the entire Torah, right? In which case he would have kept Yom Kippur, and his bris was not an on-time bris. Therefore the question is, how did it push away Yom Kippur? How did it override Yom Kippur? Okay? So it's an interesting question. One of the answers is as follows. Why do we say that an 8th day bris pushes away Shabbos and a 9th day bris doesn't? Or a bris not on time doesn't, is because we learn from this pasuk that it's got to be the 8th day, which means only if the bris is on time. So we have two types of brises. There's a bris called bris bismano, a bris on time, and then the bris which is a delayed bris called bris shalom bismano. Avraham Avinu wasn't on time, but actually was on time because he wasn't commanded to do a bris before. Right? So therefore it's possible that Avraham Avinu was only commanded that day to do a bris. So when Avraham Avinu got the command to do a bris, halachically, his bris had the same status as a bris bismana, as a bris on time. So although he was 99, but it was still considered an on-time bris because that was the day he was commanded to do it. And that's why it was possible to override Yom Kippur. That's the thing. And before we move on to the next item, which I want to actually discuss, I'll just show you an interesting question that's asked also by the Mefarshim. And that is, you know, we have a mitzvah, for example, to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, right? So everyone would know that if Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, there's a decree that the rabbis made not to blow shofar, right? You know, we don't blow shofar on Shabbos, right? Why? Because it's a gzeirah, it's a decree that the rabbis made that because it's difficult to make to blow shofar, there's a number of halachas that you need to know how to blow shofar correctly. So they were worried that someone might want to blow shofar on the Shabbos and forget that it's Shabbos and need to ask a shayla by a rabbi or to learn from someone exactly how to blow. So therefore, they would carry the shofar in the street on Shabbos, right? Where there's no Eruv. That's a violation of Shabbos. So in order to protect that from happening, they instituted that shofar should not be blown on Shabbos. Now the rabbis could do that because they were given the mandate that they could create a precaution around the Torah, even if it means temporarily suspending a mitzvah. Right? So that's why when Shabbos falls up, when Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, we don't blow shofar on Shabbos, because we might come to carry the shofar. The same thing, if Shabbos is the first day of Sukkot, we don't bench the lulav. Same idea, because we might come to carry the lulav on the street. The same thing would happen, it doesn't happen according to our calendar, but theoretically would happen if Purim fell out on Shabbos, we would not read the Megillah, for the same reason, because you might come to carry the Megillah. Now, it doesn't happen here, but it actually does happen in Yerushalayim. Right? When we have Purim on Friday, which can happen, then Purim is on Shabbos, in Yerushalayim is on Shabbos. And it's a very, very complicated Purim. It's called what we call today a Purim Mishalash, a three-day Purim. Because what happens is, actually, they don't read the Megillah on Shabbos. They don't keep Purim. Correct. But they can't read the Megillah on Shabbos, because you're not allowed to read the Megillah on Shabbos, because you might come to carry it. Right? So that's the whole thing of what they do. They read the Megillah the day before, with everyone else, then they have the Purim on Shabbos, they do some of the stuff, and then on Sunday, they have the meal of Purim. It's a very exciting Purim. It's a three-day Purim they have, if that falls out, okay? But it's all centered on one thing, that you, certain mitzvahs were suspended on Shabbos, because it's a complicated mitzvah, and you might come to carry on the Shabbos. So the question is asked by many Mefarshim, many Rishonim, why is it the same thing with Bris? Why do we allow, bottom line, a Bris to take place on Shabbos? Right? There's many instruments that the Moel has to use to be able to do it. And in fact, it is complicated. There's no Erev. We know that the Moel has to make sure to bring it before Shabbos, whatever the case is. There's no question if you can get the baby carried on Shabbos. It's very complicated, a bris on Shabbos. So why don't we just apply the same halacha that we apply to Shofar, to Lulav, to Megillah, and say, you know what, yes, it's permitted to do a bris on Shabbos, but we won't do it because we might come to carry. Why don't we do that? So there's many, many answers given to this question. I'll just share with you three of them. One is because Tosfos says in Megillah, because of the significance of Bris, that it's such a significant mitzvah. We know that, in fact, you know, the word Bris represents the whole connection between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, it says Bris is compared to all the mitzvahs, hinted in the word Bris. The word Bris has a numerical value of Tav Resh Yud Beis, 612, because it's the 613th mitzvah, right? In other words, but it's as weighty, it has the same weight. It carries the same weight of all the 612 mitzvahs put together, right? So bris is a very, very significant mitzvah, and that's why they didn't want to tamper with the bris, and they said, no, we'll leave it on Shabbos, even though it's on Shabbos, right? That's one answer. One of the great Rishonim called the Ritva gives a different answer, and he says the following. He says, the rabbis could not have the power to push away a bris on Shabbos. Why? When it comes to shofar, when it comes to lulav, when it comes to Megillah, there's no pasuk in the Torah that specifically says you should do it on Shabbos. There's a pasuk in the Torah that says that you should blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Now, were it not for the rabbi's decree, we would go ahead and blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah as well. Why? Because blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah is no violation of Yom Tov. There's nothing wrong in actually blowing the instrument, although there's a rabbinic decree against blowing instruments, but essentially, there's no electricity, there's no fire, there's nothing involved, right? That's problematic. So therefore, when the Torah says to blow the shofar, it's an automatic thing that you would also include, you blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Came along the if it fell out on Shabbos. Came along the rabbis and said, no, if it falls out on Shabbos, you must not do it because you might come to carry, and therefore, as a precaution, don't blow the shofar. Right? Same thing with Lulav, same thing with Megillah. When it comes to Bris, however, it's different. Why? Because Bris actually involves desecration of Shabbos itself. And yet you have a specific pasuk, which is this week's parasha, Uba Yoim Hashmini, on the eighth day, whenever the eighth day comes out, because it's a repetition. We already know the bris is on the eighth day, and yet the Torah repeats it in this parasha to say, Uba Yoim Hashmini on the eighth day. So we know that it has to be on the eighth day. So the Torah has a special word, an extra word, to teach us that the bris, although it involves desecration of Shabbos, but it has a special pasuk to teach us that nonetheless it should be done on Shabbos, right? Says the Ritva, very, very logical. If the Torah specifically instructs that the bris should take place on Shabbos, the rabbis cannot undo that. They can't say, well, the bris shouldn't happen on Shabbos, because it makes the pasuk irrelevant then. Understand? The Torah specifically instructed to be on Shabbos. It's different to shofar. Shofar, there's no specific instruction that should happen on Shabbos. It's just a general mitzvah to blow shofar. So we can say, okay, on Shabbos, don't do it. But if there's a special pasuk specifically instructing the Jews to do a bris on Shabbos, then there's no way that by rabbinic decree we can undo that and suspend that and not do it on Shabbos. And that's why We don't have that same gezeirah, not the same decree when it comes to Shabbos. That's the second answer. The Ran gives an answer, Rabbeinu Nissim, and he says very simple, when it comes to shofar, when it comes to lulav, everyone's obligated on the same mitzvah on that day. Everyone has to blow the shofar, everyone has to bench the lulav. So therefore, we might all get swept up in the mitzvah and forget that it's Shabbos and someone will come to carry the lulav or carry the shofar. He says, when it comes to the bris, not everyone is obligated. It's only the father that's obligated in the mitzvah. Right? So he's the one swept up in the whole mitzvah. He's the one, or the moel maybe, that could make the mistake and carry on Shabbos. But don't forget, there's all people around. So if they want to see that he's about to carry on Shabbos, they will stop him and say, no, it's Shabbos today. Because there's enough people who don't have the mitzvah who will be focused on Shabbos and remember that it's Shabbos and not come to forget. And that's why we don't make the same decree when it comes to bris. So those are just three answers on this famous question of why bris wasn't suspended on Shabbos, the same reason, the same way as shofar and lulav. Okay, that's one thing. Now, there's another halacha.
But he can carry all his instruments.
Not if there's no eruv.
So once you put it there the day before.
Yeah. You see, because it happens like this. That's what makes it complicated. If there's no eruv, actually it's complicated, because the Torah says you can do the bris on Shabbos. The Torah doesn't say you can do the preparation for the bris on Shabbos. I mean, it's actually a dispute in the Gemara, but we paskin that it doesn't include the preparation. So, sharpening the knife, carrying the instruments, all these things cannot be done on Shabbos. They all have done before Shabbos. Yeah?
If they don't live in an air roof, carry the baby, is that...
No, it's a problem. So that's why you have to make sure that... Okay, some say you get a non-Jew to carry the baby. It's even normally what's done in places where there's no air roof or people that don't use the air roof. It's done in the same place the baby is, in the house where the baby is, and the moel just brings all the instruments the day before. That's our stuff. Okay, now, there's another thing that's learned from this pasuk, which will then connect this pasuk to the Parsha Sachodesh, which we're going to read also on the Shabbos. And that is, it says, Ubayoyim Hashmini, on the eighth day, the bris shall be done, right? So the Gemara learns, what's the emphasis on the eighth day? So we learn from there that it needs to be done during the day and not at night. Because it says ubayoyim, and it's an extra word. Again, this whole pasuk is superfluous. So therefore we learn many halachas in this pasuk, that ubayoyim hashmini, on the eighth day, that the bris is only performed during the day and not at night, right? I've seen this in practice where sometimes a person will have a baby and then for whatever practical, logistical reasons, the moel can't make it or he can't get a crowd, whatever the case is, they'll make the bris in the afternoon instead of the morning. I don't know if you've ever been to a bris in the afternoon. And it could be tricky because sometimes, particularly during the winter, I've seen a moel come a bit late and it's racing towards the shkia sunset, and it's sometimes a bit of a tight squeeze to make sure the bris is actually performed before sunset, right? Because you cannot do a bris at night. Now, some say, and this is already learned from a pasuk in Lech Lecha, where it says, Shmoy Nas Yom, it's got to be 8 days and not nights. Well, others say that's only with regard to an 8-day bris. But we have, in this halacha, we learn that even if the bris is not on time, even if it's been pushed off, right? In other words, it's the 9th day, it's the 10th day, it's the 15th day, whatever, and now you're ready to do the bris, and the baby's healthy, you cannot do a bris at night, it needs to be done during the day. Okay, so that's what we learned. However, in history, we learn about a bris, or brisois, many brisen, that were actually performed at night. And what is that? And we need to understand why. And that is a bris which is connected with the parsha, the special parsha, which we read this week, called Parshas HaChodesh. Right? So after we finish the parsha this week, we read the four special portions, and it's called Parshas HaChodesh. Comes from Shmois, and it's the preparation for the Jews going out of Egypt, and it's the bringing of the Korban Pesach and so on. Let's have a look at it. So page 348. Chapter 12, Perek Yudbeis. Yep. This is what we read this week after the parasha. And the pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aharon be'eretz Mitzrayim lemer." Right? Moshe and Aaron spoke. Hashem spoke to Moshe and Aaron. What did He say to them? "Hachodesh hazel lachem roish chadoshim." So the first mitzvah was the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh. He pointed out that when Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, it was the night of Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the first of Nisan, and He said, "This month will be the first month in the Jewish calendar cycle." And also He told him how to do it, that you have to be according to the moon. Basically, it's the mitzvah of making, sanctifying Rosh Chodesh and making the calendar, based on the lunar system. Right? Rosh Chodeshim Rishonu Lachem L'Chodesh HaShana. It is the first month of the months of the year. And that's why in the Torah you will find there's no names to the months. There's only numbers. And second month, third month, fourth month, it's all from the month of Nisan. Okay? So that's the first mitzvah in Parshas Chodesh. But then the Torah goes, turn over the page. Torah prepares the Jewish people for the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, the Paschal offering. It says the following: "Dabru el kaladas Yisrael lemer." Speak to the Jewish people, saying, "Be'osar lachodesh hazeh." On the 10th of the month, okay. So this was Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Hashem said, "Go talk to the Jewish people and tell them that on the 10th of the month, the yikhul lacham ish sele veis ovis sele bais. Each one should take a lamb per household." Now they needed to take the lamb 4 days before they were going to bring it as the korban. Okay. "V'mimata bais miyos mise." If one house is too small to eat the holy lamb, then v'lokachu shcheinu hakorva beis, you take with the neighbor, mixas nefasha ishku v'yachsot chesal aseh. You work out a number of people per lamb. So what they had to do was that to create groups, which was done every year in the Beis HaMikdash, create groups which would be registered on that particular lamb and that particular korban beis. Says the pasuk in Hay in 5, "Se tomim zochar ben shonot," should be a perfect lamb, a male, a year old, min akvasim, and it could be from the sheep, or from the goats, tikoch yishutri. Now, the Torah said they had to prepare this lamb on the 10th of Nisan, but only shecht it and offer it up as a korban on the 14th of Nisan, right? Says the pasuk, "V'hoyu lachem l'mishmeres." The lamb will be for your God it. Ad arbaasim l'chodesh hazeh till the 14th, and on the 14th, v'shachatu oisei kol kahal adas yishol bein arbaim. On the 14th, they all had to shecht it, and then what happened was, the first night of Pesach, which they were still in the exile of Mitzrayim, we know the Jews had their first Seder. The first Seder was actually celebrated before they actually left Egypt, right? They had the Seder, they ate the Korban Pesach, they ate matzah, they ate maror, and then it was midnight, the plague of the firstborns happened, and the next morning, they all left Egypt. Yeah. Now, one detail of this mitzvah of Korban Pesach is they had to take the lamb 4 days before Pesach, right? This was a detail that was only relevant that year, meaning all other years in future times in the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan and the Temple and so on, where they had the mitzvah of bringing Korban Pesach, they did not have to take the lamb 4 days before. Okay? This business of taking the lamb 4 days before Pesach was a detail that was only in what we call Pesach Mitzrayim. It was only in the Korban Pesach, which was relevant to that particular year. Okay? So Rashi asks the question, and I'm going to read you the Rashi. He says something very interesting. He says the following. He says, why did they have to take it 4 days before? So he brings like this. There was a great Tana, his name was Ramasya ben Chorosh. Right? Ramasya ben Chorosh says that there's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. And Shir HaShirim has a lot of Song of Songs, right? That King Solomon authored. And in Shir HaShirim, it's a love story between the Jewish people and Hashem, essentially. And in Shir HaShirim, there's a lot of reference to the birth of the Jewish nation, which took place when they left Egypt. And in Shir HaShirim, there's a pasuk that says that Hashem passed through the Jewish nation and He saw they were naked. What does that mean? Right? The time had come and yet they were naked. What does that mean? It means like this. That Hashem came and He saw the time had come for Him to fulfill His promise to the patriarchs and the matriarchs to redeem the Jewish nation from Mitzrayim. And yet the Jews were unworthy. Why were they unworthy? Because they were naked of mitzvahs. They had no mitzvahs. They were assimilated. They were attached to Egypt. They had drifted. They were a nation. They were persecuted. But they had no merit. They had no intrinsic deserving factor why they should be redeemed from Mitzrayim. So what did Hashem do? Hashem gave them two mitzvahs. The mitzvah which we call Dam Pesach and Dam Milah. The blood of the Korban Pesach and the blood of circumcision. Right? So he told them they had to circumcise themselves. Why? Because later on he told them actually that circumcision was something they had to have as a prerequisite for eating the Korban Pesach. Because the halacha was that someone who's uncircumcised, a male who's uncircumcised, cannot be part of the Korban Pesach. Right? And he gave them the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach itself. Then he told them to smear the blood of the Korban Pesach on the doorpost, and that was the night of Pesach, where the malach came, the angel came to destroy the firstborns, and Hashem passed over. That's what we call the Pesach. He skipped over the Jewish homes and didn't kill them. Okay, so how does that answer the question? It answers the question because Hashem. That's why Hashem gave him 4 days. He says, listen, I'm giving you a big job. You have to circumcise yourself in the 4 days and get ready to go out of Mitzrayim. So that's why I told him to take the Korban Pesach 4 days before Pesach. And then suddenly Rashi throws in a phrase which throws the whole thing off. Rashi says, "V'nasan lahem shtei mitzvahs." He gave them these two mitzvahs, Dam Pesach, the blood of Korban Pesach, and Dam Milah, and the blood of circumcision, Shemolu be'oisai halayla, because they circumcised themselves on that night, on the night of Pesach. Yeah? So the commentaries point out, particularly one of the commentaries on Rashi called the Maskil Adavid, that he just undermined the whole answer. When did the circumcision take place when they left Egypt? When? So, from the first part of Rashi, it seems like Rashi's answering a question, why they needed 4 days preparation. So he says they needed to have two mitzvahs, the mitzvah of Pesach and the mitzvah of Milah, the mitzvah of circumcision. And needed warning, which seems to imply, as Rashi's talking, that that's why they were given 4 days. Suddenly Rashi does an about turn, and he says they were given Pesach and circumcision because they circumcised that night. Right? So what's going on? Sorry? So the Maskil Adavid answers, and it's based on a Medrash. And the Medrash says a fascinating thing. First of all, the truth is that all the Jews should have already been circumcised. Why? Circumcision wasn't a new mitzvah. Circumcision was given to Avraham Avinu. And it was a mitzvah, continuous mitzvah, from when Avraham Avinu was given it, from when Yitzchak was born. When Yitzchak was born, he was given a bris, Yaakov was given, etc., and so on and so forth. They should have been circumcised. That's one. Well, imagine 1 second.
So
you'll see. You'll see in a second. You'll see. Hold on a second. Yeah. And yet they weren't circumcised. Why were they circumcised? Because the Medrash tells us that for some reason the Jews did drift in Mitzrayim, and they resisted circumcision. So therefore, you had a whole nation of people who should have been circumcised but weren't. Okay. What happens is the Medrash says a story. I'll tell you the story, and then I'll see, and I'll tell you how the Maskil Adavid, the commentator Rashi, fits it into this Rashi and gives us a sort of a picture of what happened that night. The Medrash says what happened was as follows: that on the night of Korban Pesach, Moshe Rabbeinu took his Korban Pesach, and like the others, which was supposed to happen, they slaughtered the Korban Pesach and they roasted it. When Moshe and Aaron roasted their Korban Pesach, says the Medrash, Hashem, there was a wind in Mitzrayim. Hashem, there was an aroma, a smell of the Korban Pesach. You know, roasted, a barbecue is a good smell as it is. But what Hashem did was, he brought the wind from Gan Eden, says the Medrash, and mixed it into the aroma of Korban, the Korban Pesach of Moshe and Aaron. And the aroma spread through the suburb of Goshen, where the Jews were living. And suddenly they all flocked to Moshe Rabbeinu saying, give us some of this. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. To which Moshe Rabbeinu responded and said, no, some of you can't have this, because you're not circumcised. And part of the halachas of Korban Pesach is that if you're not circumcised, you can't have it. You can't partake. Says the Medrash, what do the Jews do? With great self-sacrifice and commitment, immediately on that night, they circumcise themselves. They underwent circumcision. Sorry? Yes, so the first point that it was one of the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim. They were able, normally it takes an adult, especially a few days to heal. they were healed miraculously right away, and so on and so forth. Okay? And that's why Rashi makes reference to the fact that they circumcised that night. So what does that have to do with the 4 days? So the Maskil Adov, it says what happened was as follows. Moshe Rabbeinu gathered all the Jews and said, listen, the 10th of the month of Nisan, you've got to take your Korban Pesach. Yeah? And you should know that you need to be circumcised. Some of them listened, some of them took it seriously, and a lot of them did circumcise. And that's why they were able to register a whole bunch of different lambs, and when it came Erev Pesach, they were pretty much ready to go ahead. The problem was that there were some that didn't do it yet. Some were still reluctant to do it. Because they didn't realize that it's a serious business. If you don't have a Korban Pesach, if you don't have a circumcision, you can't partake in the Korban Pesach. Particularly when they sort of smelt the Gan Eden smell of Moshe Rabbeinu's Korban Pesach, they really got upset and they wanted to be partake. And therefore, those were the rest of them that didn't circumcise themselves. When Moshe Rabbeinu told them, there's no way out. They circumcised themselves that night. So therefore, they were given 4 days. It's true, that's why they were 4 days. Because they were given these two mitzvahs of Pesach and Milah, but some of them didn't, and therefore many of them ended up actually circumcising themselves on the night of Pesach. Okay? That's the story. The obvious question is, we just learned from our parasha, that's what I'm connecting the two parashas, right? That to Yom HaShmini, it's got to be daytime. How did they circumcise on night? Now the truth is, to be honest, it's not a tremendous halachic problem. Because the special halacha, bris was an old mitzvah, circumcision was an old mitzvah of Tamar Avraham. But the detail that we learn from our parsha, that bris must take place during the day, according to many commentaries, that particular halachic detail is something which came later after the Torah was given. So it is possible that halachically, before Matan Torah, there was a mitzvah of Bris Milah. There was a mitzvah of circumcision right from the time of Avraham Avinu. But the detail of prohibiting Bris at night didn't apply. And therefore, before Matan Torah, it could have happened at night. Right? And therefore, that's why some of them ended up having a circumcision at night. Okay, that's one possible answer. But we need to understand still, philosophically, if the Bris was so important, and it was so important after Matan Torah not to do it at night, how come it ended up that many of them ended up doing it at night? So the Chidah, a great Sephardi sage, answers the question and he says, you know why they did it at night? You know why? The fact that the bris happened at night when they went out of Egypt is actually very significant, he says. And it's based on a Zohar. He says that night when they left Egypt was a very significant night. And he says that the Zohar says that what happened that night was that night there was an experience of a phrase that's used in Tehillim. Tehillim chapter 139, there's a pasuk which says, "V'layla kayoyim yo'ir," the night will shine like day. Says the Zohar, when did that night ever shine like day? Says it was the night of the Yetzias Mitzrayim. It was the night they went out of Egypt. That was a special night. Well, it was a full moon, but that's not what it means. No, when we have a full moon, it's still pretty dark. But it says it was like night. It was like daytime. V'layla kayoyim yor, the day was like night. The night was like day. It says Zohar, that was Yetzias Mitzrayim. Such a powerful night. And even though night normally symbolizes darkness, that night was symbolized revelation and brightness. And therefore that night was like a miraculous night. Makas B'chorus took place in that night. And therefore it was an amazing night. And therefore the night was compared to daytime. Says the Chidah, that's why you cannot ask questions from a circumcision that took place that night. That night was different. That night was V'layla kayom yor, it shone like daytime. Incidentally, we still have this idea that nowadays we have this concept halachically, where normally on a Yom Tov we say Hallel, right? But Hallel is a daytime mitzvah. Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, Shavuos, right? Sukkos, we always say Hallel by day, we don't say Hallel at night. The one exception is Pesach night. Pesach night is part of the Seder. Many communities say it also after Ma'ariv, right? It's something which is not normally instituted to do at night. Why do we say it at night? Because the night of Pesach is different. The Seder night is a different night. The Seder night is a very powerful night. The Seder night has the same energy as it had back then in Mitzrayim, and it's got a daytime energy as opposed to a nighttime energy, right? Which, by the way, some people, we're getting up to Pesach, so it's nice to share some Pesach thoughts. That's how some commentaries explain the phrase of Manishtana. Manishtana halayla zemekaleres. Why is this night different to other nights? The child picks up the Kedusha, the holiness of Seder night, and says, night normally symbolizes darkness, confusion, lack of clarity. Daytime symbolizes divine revelation, a great energy. says, this night's different. This night it's dark outside, but it seems to have the energy of the daytime. Why is this night different from all other nights? What's special about this night that's so different from all other nights? That it's like a daytime night. Yeah? Says the Chidah, that's the Pshat. So therefore that night was daytime. It was night, but it was daytime. Yeah? And that's why they're able to do the circumcision. But what's interesting is that what does that mean that the day turned into night? The night turned into day. Because it cannot mean that the night just miraculously became complete daytime. Why not? Because we must say that even in a halachic sense at least, the night remained partially a night. Why do I say that? Because they had another mitzvah that night. The mitzvah they had was to eat the Korban Pesach. Which the Korban Pesach has to be eaten at night. See, bris must not be done during the day. Circumcision has to be done during the day. Korban Pesach, the eating of the Korban Pesach, the Seder, eating matzah and so on, is supposed to be done at night. It says, Bo'erev toichol matzahs. You must eat matzah at night time. That's what it says. Yeah? So to say, to answer how they could have a bris, because the night suddenly turned into day, answers one problem and creates another. Right? Because we became mamash daytime, so it's okay to do a bris milah, but then you have a problem with how to eat matzah. And the whole thing seems strange. I mean, God had a much simpler way of doing all this. What he could have done is, they could have roasted the thing in the afternoon, and Hashem could have brought the smell of Gan Eden in the afternoon, and everyone could have responded in the afternoon and given themselves a bris before sunset, and everything would have been fine, right? So what's going on here? Why do we have this thing that dafka waited till night? And then they gave themselves a bris. And then we say that the night shone like daytime, and that's why they're able to give a bris. But yet we have to conclude that it wasn't complete day, it kind of partially remained night. So I don't know what it was. Was it day? Was it night? So it seems like for some things it was day, for other things it was night. So for a bris it was as good as day. For Korban Pesach it was as good as night. What is this all about? Right. So I'll share with you an idea that's similar to another idea that I once shared with you, the midnight theory, which I'm sure some of you remember. But it fits right into the whole process of going out of Mitzrayim. What is Pesach, and why is Pesach called Pesach? Right? So we have the following idea. Every yontif, every part of the year represents another process, right? What does Pesach represent? Pesach represents the concept of birth, rebirth. That's the time the Jewish people became a nation. And the way that happened was through the process which we call Pesach. What does Pesach mean? Right, jumping. Right, we call it Pesach. Hashem jumped. He passed over the houses. What does it mean Hashem passed over the houses? So there's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim which makes reference to Pesach, which talks about the idea that when Hashem came to redeem us when we left Egypt, He was medaleg al ha'horim. Hashem was jumping over the mountains, skipping over the hills, and so on. That. So what does that mean? Hashem was jumping. What does that mean? So we know that there's two systems, so to speak, which Hashem created in the world. There's a system of routine and order, where things happen in a logical sequence, in a normal way. Seder. The concept of Seder. Which is interesting why we call Seder Shel Pesach. We'll talk about it in a minute. Right? Now that could be both in terms of the way the world runs, the nature of the world, the routine, the things that are supposed to happen every day, the sun's supposed to rise, sun's supposed to set, things are supposed to grow, things are supposed to happen in a particular sequence, particular order, the order of the world. But not only in nature, not only in things which are mundane, there's also an order in Torah. Right? There's a structure which Hashem gives us in Torah where certain things have a certain place, where certain halachas apply during the day, certain halachas apply during the night, right? Certain times are more suitable for some mitzvahs, certain times are suitable for other mitzvahs. There's a certain structure, which is a structure in holiness. In other words, not only nature has a structure, but even the Torah has a structure. Right? Where Hashem chose that we should live within a certain structure. Hashem chose we should live within a certain routine. And Hashem wanted us to elevate that routine and show the hand of God, bring Kedusha, and be connected to Hashem within that structural, hierarchical, one step at a time growth of keeping to a certain order and climbing the spiritual ladder of that order. Yeah? However, when it came to Mitzrayim, when it came to going out of Egypt, working within a structure, working within a routine wasn't going to work. Why not? We know that the Jewish people were at such a level of impurity, right? We know that it says in Chazal that the Jews had sunken to a level of Memtes Sha'arei Tumah. They were 49 levels of impurity. That's how low they were. And if Hashem would have left them in Mitzrayim for one more minute, they would have sunk into such a deep level of impurity, a point of no return. Right? But they were almost at a point of no return already. They were certainly weren't in a frame of mind where they could suddenly sort of embark on an experience of, you know, let's climb one thing at a time. Let's improve one day at a time. That's a good, healthy way of growing. But it's not always possible. When it came to Pesach, it needed something much more drastic than that. It needed true freedom. What is true freedom? Going out of Mitzrayim. Going out of Mitzrayim means you break all boundaries, right? The word Mitzrayim, we said this very often, the word Mitzrayim comes to the word Meitzah, which means to be locked in. Borders, prison. Yitzias Mitzrayim means going, breaking free. Transcending all limitations, transcending all barriers, breaking through anything possible that might stand in the way of true spiritual freedom. We know that, of course, the Maral explains this at great length, that Yitzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus from Egypt, which we celebrate on Pesach, mainly, we are not celebrating a physical freedom, we're celebrating a spiritual freedom. Physical freedom they had already from Rosh Hashanah. The Jews stopped working 6 months before Pesach. What's mainly celebrated on Pesach is the spiritual freedom. So when Hashem came to us on Pesach, so to speak, He redeemed us. We say in the Haggadah, Nigla Aleihem Melech Malchei Amlochem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem revealed to us and He redeemed us. What does it mean He revealed to us? That means on the night of Pesach, there was this revelation of Hashem's true infinity, Hashem's true essence, how Hashem transcends all form of boundaries, all form of limitations, all form of structure, in order to do something which was called Pesach. Pesach means to jump. Quantum leap. And He took a nation that was sunken in the 49th level of impurity, and within a second we were at the greatest level of Kedusha. Complete rebirth. Complete renewal. That's Yitzias Mitzrayim. Now without that kickstart, it never happened. By the way, that's not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to grow properly, internalize the growth. That's why we have after Pesach, we have the 49 days of Sfira Soimer, where we need to grow one step at a time. Because we've got to bring that growth into our routine, into our structure. Right? Which is why, and I mentioned before, it's interesting that what do we call the night of Pesach? What do we call that ritual we have? We call it the Seder. Right? We call it the Pesach Seder. And if you ever realize that the word Pesach Seder is an oxymoron. Seder means structure. Right? Seder means order, one thing at a time. Pesach means no order. But there isn't any order. There's just beyond. But that's why we call it Seder Shel Pesach, because Yitzias Mitzrayim, redemption from Egypt, happens through Pesach. It happens through a revelation of something that completely transcends the concept of order. And then afterwards the job is to bring that in, bring that connection in to the order of life. But initially, order has to be ignored in order to kickstart the process. And that's what Yitzias Mitzrayim is all about. That's what going out of Egypt is all about, that there was this revelation of something that transcended order completely. Yeah? So much so that order had to be suspended on Pesach night, that all forms of order had to be suspended. Mundane order and even spiritual order. And that's why, on one level, even the order and routine of Torah was suspended that night. How so? That the bris that's normally limited to the day happened at night. And yet, Korban Pesach, which has to be happened at night, still happened at night, notwithstanding that the night was day. In other words, there was no order. What is night and day? Night and day represents different forms. It represents a part of the day, a part of the night. But it also represents spiritually different manifestations of Hashem's presence. In the night, there's one type of energy. In the day, there's a different type of energy. It's different. Night and day are different, spiritually different. Certain mitzvahs we do during the day, certain mitzvahs we do during the night, because they're spiritually different. And therefore, their compatibility with night and day are different. That is the order of Torah, because Torah has an order. Because Torah has an order which allows us then to elevate the order of the world. The nature of the world. Right? But the first revelation of Yetzias Mitzrayim was a revelation that had to transcend all forms of order. Because ultimately Hashem transcends day and night. Hashem transcends, as we spoke before, Chesed and Gevurah. Hashem transcends the infinite and the finite, as we've talked about many, many times. That's the essence of Hashem. The essence of Hashem is beyond all. That's why the essence of Hashem has the power to take a nation that's sunken into the 49th level of impurity and step them out, and within a second make them, transport them to the highest levels of holiness. An impossibility. But from Hashem's point of view, it's a possibility, because Hashem transcends all form of limitations, all forms of order. And that's the depth of why that night, the night partially was day, but yet wasn't day. Because that night there was a revelation from Hashem's presence that transcends both day and night. And therefore that night, the moment of Yetzias Mitzrayim, was a moment that transcended day and night. It was something completely different. And therefore the bris which normally done during the day could have been done that night. And yet Korban Pesach, which has to be eaten at night, could have been eaten that night also. If you needed day, it was day. If you needed night, it was night. Why? Because it came from a level which is both higher than day and night. Which is the power that allowed them to experience Yetzias Mitzrayim in the first place. And that's the depth of why Hashem orchestrated it, that although we have in our parsha a din that says in the parsha Tazria that bris must be take place during the day, yet it took place during the night in the parsha Chodesh, which we read, because and the Chidosh says because the day became night, but yet it remained night for Korban Pesach, because it had to be an energy that night which transcend both day and night in order for the Jews to be able to prepare for the going out of Mitzrayim. Okay.